Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 429 for June 16th, 2013. Coming up in a few minutes.
We come from production backgrounds, and I get a lot of buzz out of branding and marketing and so forth, but I really get a buzz out of being involved in the production side of things, and it gives us the full ability to have control of our own destiny.
Jack Teeling built his career at his family's Cooley Whiskey Company in Ireland, but when Cooley was sold to Beam at the end of 2011, he saw the writing on the wall and left. This week, the Teeling Whiskey Company released the first in its new Vintage Reserve series, a 21-year-old Sauterne finished Irish single malt. More with Jack Teeling later on Whiskey Cast In Depth. I'll also have the calendar of events, your voice, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department, all on this week's episode of Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the Stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start off with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. When distilleries are mothballed, there's always a chance that they could reopen, but that's often more of a dream than a reality. Friday, the dream became a reality at Glenkeith. After 14 years in mothballs, the distillery is back in business again. Chivas Brothers decided last year to reopen Glenkeith, which is located next to its Strathyla distillery in Keith. The renovation expanded Glenkeith's production capacity by 50%, while the energy-saving measures make it one of the company's greenest distilleries. However, we probably won't see any Glenkeith bottled as a single malt. Chivas Brothers has been expanding capacity to supply its demand for blends, and all of Glenkeith's output is expected to be earmarked for the blenders. Ben Romick is one of those distilleries where the dream became a reality as well. This year marks the 15th anniversary of Ben Romick's revival, and owner Gordon and McPhail is planning a major expansion for Speyside's smallest distillery. The family-owned company will make a seven-figure investment to boost production by 50%. As managing director Michael Urquhart told us last month at the Spirit of Toronto Festival, the little distillery is making some big gains.
Ben Romick is going from strength to strength. Volumes increased 40% throughout the world last year. And we're looking for similar levels of growth coming through in 2013.
The number of jobs created by the expansion, one. Of course, that is a 50% increase, since Ben Romick operates with just two men. A third operator will be added to help out with production. There will be a marketing director added to the staff at Gordon and McPhail's headquarters in Elgin as well. On the business front, we saw some behind-the-scenes changes announced this week, and while you may not see the impact directly as you're shopping for whiskeys, there may be some subtle changes ahead. First off, Brooke Laddie is ending its distribution deal for the UK with Blavid Wines and Spirits. Blavid was responsible for getting Brooke Laddie's whiskies from the distillery to bars and retailers in the UK, but Brooke Laddie will now handle its UK distribution in-house. The company will also end a similar deal with Gordon and McPhail for The Botanist Gin and will handle that distribution in-house as well. Now, that may be just one of several dominoes stemming from last year's acquisition of Brooke Laddie by Remy Cointreau, which has a global distribution network in-house. Remy's U.S. unit has been handling the Edrington Group's portfolio in the U.S. for many years. But the two companies agreed earlier this week to end their partnership when the current contract expires next March. Edrington will set up its own U.S. arm to import the Macallan, Highland Park, the Famous Grouse, and Cutty Sark whiskies, along with Brugal rum. Analysts have expected that Remy's U.S. unit will eventually take on distribution for Brooke Laddie, and while Edrington executives have never said anything publicly, it's believed they may not have been pleased with Remy's entry into the Scotch whiskey business. Now let's talk about whiskies instead of business for a moment. The Spirit Journal's F. Paul Packelt released his annual list of the world's 120 top spirits this week, and nine whiskies made the top 10, along with one rum and one Calvados. I know, that adds up to 11. Turns out that for the first time there was a tie for the number one spot on the list. Paul picked Angel's Envy Cask Strength Bourbon and Highland Park 25 Single Malt Scotch as the best spirits in the world. In his list, he said he couldn't say that one was even a hair better than the other. The overall list includes 22 American whiskeys, 18 Scotch whiskeys, and 2 Irish whiskeys. You can find the top 10 and more details in the news section at WhiskeyCast.com. The Balvenie released batch number 8 of maltmaster David Stewart's Tun 1401 single malt this week at its Balvenie Whiskey Fete in London. This batch will be available in the UK and Europe and comes from a vatting of 9 American oak casks and 3 European oak ex-sherry casks. Look for batch number 9 to be out in North America later this year. Last time around, I mentioned the tanker truck crash and fire involving a load of Scotch whiskey in Woodbridge, New Jersey last week. The mystery was what brand of whiskey was inside and where was it being delivered to? Well, I was able to find that out this week. Turns out it was a bulk load of Clan MacGregor blended Scotch whiskey being delivered from the port to the William Grant & Sons bottling plant in Edison, New Jersey, just a few miles from the crash scene. Remember, UK laws allow bulk exports of blended Scotch whiskey for bottling outside of Scotland. Most of the so-called value blends from the major whiskey producers are bottled outside Scotland for export markets. Finally, we have 2 very sad notes to report this week. First off, I'd like to express the condolences of the entire WhiskeyCast community to Frank McCarty of Springbank. Frank's wife, Lindsay, died this week, just a few weeks before Frank's scheduled retirement at the end of July. Also, Ian Banks passed away last Sunday. He was one of Scotland's leading authors, and whiskey lovers have been toasting his memory for the 2003 book Raw Spirit, which chronicled his road trips to visit every distillery in Scotland. He'd been diagnosed with gallbladder cancer in March and immediately made plans to marry his longtime partner Adele Hartley. He also wrote one final book. The Quarry will be published this week. It's the story of a man dying of cancer while being cared for by his teenage son. Ian Banks was 59. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at WhiskeyCast.com. But for now, that's the week's news.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Help us select the next Glenmorangie single malt whiskey with the Glenmorangie Caskmasters project. Sign up online through the Glenmorangie Facebook page or on glenmorangie.com.
This week's Your Voice segment is brought to you by Johnny Walker. Had several comments on last week's episode with Joshua Hatton and Jason Johnstone Yellen of Single Cask Nation and the Jewish Whiskey Company. Paul LaGrange posted this note, heard the interview, and read the New York Times article. I like that you guys brought up Glenmurray. I tried the Chardonnay cask-aged single malt, and as more of a fan of Islay peatiness, was pleasantly surprised. A very refreshing scotch that in many ways takes on the characteristics of a Chardonnay. I mentioned the passing of Ian Banks a couple of minutes ago, and that lots of whiskey fans have been toasting him. Michael Derozhinsky posted this note, "We knew Ian did not have long to live, but it is still a shock to the senses. I told him when the day came I would toast him with his choice of the perfect dram, 21-year-old Glenfiddich Havana Reserve. I drank it neat, no need for water. That was already tearing from my eyes. I can only hope the angels are sharing their perfect drams with Ian now." And finally, Blake Johnson from North Carolina is looking for some help from folks in the Washington, D.C. area. Here's what he had to say. "My daughter will be starting school at George Mason University in the fall. That means I'll be heading up to the D.C. area more and more. I'm thinking this might be a chance to pick up some whiskeys I can't get in North Carolina. Can you give me any recommendations on good liquor stores in the Fairfax and or D.C. area?" Well, Fairfax won't be a lot of help, since Virginia has state stores that have pretty much the same basic stock at most locations. Now, it's been several years since I've checked out retailers in Washington, though, so if any of you have suggestions, please feel free to share them. You can always post a note on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com or on our Facebook page. You can also email me. My address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker on the web at JohnnyWalker.com. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Lots of tastings coming up this week. I mentioned Washington a minute ago. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's U.S. chapter will have a tasting at the Jack Rose Dining Saloon on June 18th. Reserve 101 in Houston, Texas has an Angel's Envy tasting that same night. Sam Snead's House of Whiskey in Auckland, New Zealand has an Ardbeg Legends tasting on the 19th. The Brandy Library in New York City will have a tasting of New York whiskeys that same night. And Cadenhead's Whiskey Market in Berlin has a tasting of Campbelltown whiskeys on the 19th as well. The Bushmills Live Music Festival will be on the 19th and 20th at the Old Bushmills Distillery in Northern Ireland. And finally, the Australian Malt Whiskey Tasting Championship will be on the 21st at the Australian Museum in Sydney. Those are just a few of the whiskey events coming up this week. You'll find almost 300 different events on the calendar at whiskeycast.com. Just look in the pub section. The calendar of events is brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Michael Power, stock controller, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
I've been working in Middleton Distillery for the last 28 years. My job base is to organise deliveries of the cereals that are used to make Redbreast. Also, I have to be very mindful of the quality of the cereals coming in, such as the barley and the malt, which are specifically used for Redbreast. We're very mindful of the continuity of supply and the continuity of quality, and we use grain suppliers from the Munster area, which is one of the best growing areas for barley in Ireland. I have been dealing with basically the same people, such as Henry Goods and Pat Den, who have been supplying us with barley. It's usually spring barley going back all those years. Over the years, I've grown to like Redbreast more and more. It's because it's like the distillery itself. Something has developed with me. When you've tasted other whiskies, you learn to drink whiskey, and then later on, when you want more complexity or you want something more from a whiskey, tend to go to whiskies like Redbreast. Redbreast is unique because of the way it's made. In the traditional way, the pot stills would have been the traditional way to make Irish whiskey.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
WhiskeyCast In Depth is brought to you by Woodford Reserve. The Teeling Whiskey Company released the first in a new series of Vintage Reserve Irish single malts this week, with a 21-year-old whiskey finished in a Sauterne wine cask. Jack Teeling started his company in April of last year after leaving Cooley Whiskey. His father, John, started Cooley back in 1987, and when Beam bought Cooley at the end of 2011, Jack had the option to stay on. But he didn't like the idea of being a small fish in a big corporate ocean and decided to set off on his own.
I felt when I left Cooley there was some unfinished business with regard to myself, and I think the opportunity now is bigger than it ever was before. When Cooley was set up in 87, the category was very dormant. The consumption was predominantly in the island of Ireland. Now it's a totally different opportunity. It's a global opportunity being driven by the growth in the US market, with Irish whiskey becoming more and more part of popular culture. It's cascading into surrounding markets, and even in our domestic market, which has been a very flat to downward trend for Irish whiskey for the last 10-15 years, you have a whole new generation of consumers coming into the category, and it's throwing out great opportunities for independent players to come out with hopefully interesting and relevant propositions for them. And I wanted to really take my own 11-12 years experience within the category and apply it in a different way to take advantage of the opportunity.
Let's explain some of the sourcing behind your whiskies that you've been releasing, because I know that you had access to some of the stocks from Cooley, but you've expanded beyond Cooley to other stocks as well from other distilleries.
Yeah, so I exited Cooley with a supply agreement for some mature stock and some new fill. So we are a customer of Cooley's, and we'll continue to be, and particularly for new fill stock. But we had a lot of connections within the category from different things that we did in our coolie days. And I'll be honest with you, for 6 months I knocked on a lot of different doors, asked a lot of questions, and if you keep knocking, sometimes the door opens slightly. So we managed to acquire a reasonable portfolio of maturing and mature stock from multiple sources to enable us to offer a full range of offerings and to enable us to stay within the category for the next number of years as we look to build out our own production assets.
And let's talk about that real quickly. I know that you had at least discussed openly the plans for trying to build a distillery in Dublin. Where does that stand and what's your goal there?
Yeah, well, it goes back to the core of our provenance and our own heritage within the category because our name would be modernly associated with Cooley Distillery in that my father set it up in 87. But prior to that, our family has been involved in whiskey dating back to 1782, and in particularly distilling in Dublin, when in 1782 Walter Teeling had a medium-sized to small distillery in the area of Dublin called the Liberties, which was the industrial engine of the city, and in particularly in a street called Marylebone Lane. The whole logic behind the Teeling Whiskey Company is to bring distilling back to the heart of our involvement in the category and to bring distilling back to Dublin. Dublin whiskey has its own unique provenance and heritage and was really the driver for the golden age of Irish whiskey back in the 19th century. And this is why the great brands came out of there, Powers, Jameson, the large distilleries in Thomas Street of George Rowe, Powers, the Phoenix Park Distillery. You can go on and on and on. And these were some of the largest distilleries in the world that were built there, and to this day you can still see them. But in 1976, the last distillery shut down when the Powers Distillery shut down and all the production was consolidated into Middleton. We feel there's a great opportunity to be true to ourselves and our own family connection, but also to bring a unique industry back into Dublin that will add to the tourists, add to the selection of availability of Irish whiskies, and also to have a brand showcase for ourselves. So the plan is bring it back into Dublin, we've been working pretty hard on them the last 9 months to do so. And we found a location. We're at the moment engaging with Dublin City Council at multiple different levels, trying to jump through a lot of hoops. We'll be able to get our planning application in by the end of the summer, with a view that we'll get a decision made near to the end of the year.
So realistically, the end of 2014, early 2015 for opening, if you can get everything in a row and get it all taken care of quickly?
Yeah, that's what we'd hope for. You know, ideally what we had planned was to mid-2014 was where we were looking for. A couple of delays have come out of the woodwork that's kind of pushed that back a little bit. If we get planning permission through, it will be the guts of 12 months to get everything turned around in terms of getting our stills, getting our front and back end all sorted. So end of 2014, start to 2015 is the goal.
What would it mean to you to actually have a Teeling distillery in Dublin again after so many years?
Oh, look, this is why you do this. This is, you know, why you're in the industry. We come from a production background, and I get a lot of buzz out of branding and marketing and so forth. But, I really get a buzz out of being involved in the production side of things, and it gives us the full ability to have control of our own destiny, but also to be really innovative as well. But to do it in location of the city where my ancestors first started off in the category, and to bring distilling back into Dublin is really the fire in my belly, who gets me out of bed every day and makes me deal with the bureaucracy of the county councils trying to get this thing across the line. So very passionate about it, very excited about it. We'll hopefully copper fast our family involvement in driving Irish whiskey forward from where it's at now.
And on that family involvement, you just lured your brother away from Cooley to join you with your company now, right?
Well, it's like, as I said, I wouldn't say lured him across. I think His vision was that he was always going to give it a shot working in Beam, and he took a, we had obviously a lot of ownership of the brands that were involved in there, and he took it upon himself to take on the role of integrating the brands within the organization. He did that for 16 months and oversaw some repack work they did with Kilbeggan and did a lot of good work in the Kilbeggan distillery. You know, we felt that he'd done his stint, but I think he sees the opportunity, he sees the need for, let's say, independent players to come out there and do things a little bit differently. And it's quite different being a family company and the culture that we would have had in Cooley to a larger multinational. And I think two teams are going to be better than one. They're going after the opportunity, he brings a different bunch of skill sets that hopefully will complement mine and enable us to do a lot more, a lot quicker.
Do you miss it over there? Because you pretty much grew up over there along with Stephen.
Yeah, well, look, I miss all the people. I miss everything about it, to be honest with you. But, you know, this is just the nature. You can't look back. You got to look forwards. I think the guys in Beam will do a great job with the Cooley brands, and we'll take it in a different direction, give it the fire to really put them on the scene. It gives Steve and myself our own chance to put our own footprint on the category in a different way, and hopefully in a complementary way as well.
You've been focusing primarily on small batches. Let's go through the range fairly quickly, starting with the Poitrine you released, because this really is sort of an Irish moonshine for people who aren't familiar with it, right?
Yeah, it's basically white whiskey. It's straight off the still, new make whiskey spirit, and it dates back, you know, prior to whiskey. There was Poitrine made in Ireland for a long, long time. It's integrated into the fabric of Irish culture. Anyone from Ireland, you mentioned Poitrine too, they'll have a good or a bad story about when they first tasted Poitrine. And even to this day, if you go to a celebration, be it a wake or a wedding, there'll always be someone with a bottle of the queer stuff, as they call it down the country. And it's still very much, let's say, a craft that's practiced, albeit illicitly. And there's always a local craftsman who could produce a good spirit. And what we wanted to do was to introduce Poitrine to a wider audience and to premiumize it and make people proud of it and drag it out of the shadows and hopefully let a new generation of consumers discover it and enjoy it in a different way. So but we see it as a way to sample new make Irish whiskey spirits, but, you know, it can also be a base for premium cocktails and different drinks like that. It probably won't be the biggest category, but I still think for us it fills a niche and fills out our portfolio of interesting Irish spirits or whiskey-related products that we're going to have.
Now, while the other Irish whiskey companies have been focusing primarily on blends and pot stills, you've been focusing more on the single malts with the rest of the range, right?
Well, we have two other offerings. We have our Teeling Whiskey Small Batch proposition, which actually is a blend. But we go about how we do. We've taken a lot of learnings what people would normally do with single malts and apply that to the blended category, because still Irish whiskey is predominantly blended, in that over 90% of the sales are still blended whiskeys, and it hasn't segmented as much as you would see in Scottish whiskey, even though it's with all the innovative single pot stills coming out and other offerings from other distilleries, it's going to expand a lot quicker. But we felt there was a gap above the standard Irish whiskies and a need for someone to come out with offering that would help segment the category and create a ladder to enable consumers that enjoy your standard smooth, sweet Irish whiskey, but are interested in discovering something a little bit more, I wouldn't say challenging, but a little bit more flavorsome, a little bit more character in it. So we came up with the concept of a small batch rum, I wouldn't say finished, but married blended Irish whiskey. And what we did with that, we hand-selected a range of grain and malt casks of different ages. We married that together in rum casks, and we sourced our rum casks from Florida, Canada, and Nicaragua. Left them there for around 5 months. And what that did was the molasses sweetness of the rum acted as a glue to hold the grain and malt together and impart an extra layer of molasses sweetness onto the whiskey. And we then decided to bottle at 46% to enable the true flavors of the whiskey to come through, so we didn't have to chill filter it, so to take out some of the fatty acids and esters that are actually there. And have just produced a very interesting and differentiated blended Irish whiskey that has an extra layer of character from the extra maturation and rum cask and from bottling at 46%. And that is, let's say, being positioned above your standard Irish in between your single malt and your single pot stills. And that is, we bottled our first batch in February of this year, and it's been very, very well received. We just got a 91 rating from the BTI and Silver Medal in the Irish, the International Spirits Challenge and different things like that. So it's been well received. Consumers are definitely buying into it, and as I said, hopefully we'll fulfill that need for having something in between the more flavoursome and your standard Irish.
And then you went old with the Vintage Reserve collection, right?
Yeah, and again, looking at the opportunities and what's going out there, and rather than come out with something that's directly in line with the market, we felt that it was an opportunity or nearly a challenge to come out with some Irish whiskies that would be at the top end of the category. And to, we look at all the other categories like Scotch, Cognac, Tequila, Rum, that would have a wide range of, you know, pretty old, super premium offerings, and we thought we could do something ourselves, and we were lucky enough to acquire some very interesting older single malts that we decided we're going to release as a family under a banner called the Vintage Reserve Collection. And our very first bottling, which I was involved in actually hand bottling yesterday, if you believe that, it was is our 21-year-old, and this consists of 21-year-old double distilled single malt that has been matured primarily in bourbon casks, but have been finished in some Sauternes sweet wine casks for around 10 months. And we bottled that at 46%, no chill filtration again. And it will be limited to only 5,000 bottles. The first batch that we bottled yesterday only was for 250 bottles.
And you've got older editions coming after that.
We have older editions, yeah. And again, just we're blessed in terms of having access to this whiskey, in that we have a 25-year-old single malt coming out. This we have actually down in some white Burgundy casks, again, just imparting an extra layer of flavor to it. And then we have some 30-year-old whiskey that we're not doing anything with because it's just amazing as it is. And this whiskey is very, very different to anything you've ever tasted from Irish whiskey before. It really is. It's beautiful stuff. It's like deep tropical fruit flavors coming through. It's very, very complex. I think people are really, really going to like it. So we're very excited by having the ability to release these whiskies, and we don't have a lot of it, so it's going to cost a little bit, but anyone who has the resources to get their hands on some, they're going to be amazed and astounded by the taste profiles that they'll actually taste.
Now, I have to ask, you mentioned that you have an agreement with Cooley to get access to stocks, and including new and aged whiskeys, but Cooley's only been around since 87, so that would be 26 years now. Where are you sourcing the other whiskeys from, or can you say, because I know they don't do a lot of single malt down south in Cork, and there's not a lot of other sources that you can get Irish whiskey from.
Well, you're
that vintage.
Yeah, I didn't know you're so good at your maths there, Mark. But it's well spotted. We have managed to source whiskey from multiple different sources. So we have whiskey from Cooley, but we also have secure whiskey from another distillery. This distillery would be preliminarily associated with single malt. So that's all I can say.
And we can put two and two together, probably as a distillery that is located, shall we say, in the northern part of Ireland, without going any further than that.
Probably not a bad place to have a look. So.
I know, you can't say officially, but when do you hope to have your own whiskey, the stuff that you make, on stock?
Yeah, so what we can do, and, you know, obviously everyone says you know, there's different ways to put your own signature on whiskies, and what we're doing at the moment is we're playing around with different maturations, different types of wood and stuff like that. So, which is fine, and you know, it gives us ability to change signatures of different distilleries that we're currently sourcing. Stock through. At the end of it, you really want to have full control of what your mash bills are, how you distill it, what wood you put it in from day one. We're really eager to get back to that. We have some great ideas, particularly about reviving some old mash bills that we've uncovered in Dublin and that we feel are keeping with the older style of pot still that would have been made in Dublin, the heavier style and people are very interested in, that you can taste if you get your hands on an old bottle of some of the Dublin brands. We're hoping that we can get the approval across for Dublin by the end of the year, source our kit and be distilling, as I said, by the end of 2014, and new things then hitting the markets minimum 3 years after that. So it's, things don't happen overnight. It will be more like from 2018 until from grain to bottle, whiskey from our own distillery will be on the shelf. So we're lucky enough that we do have stock to enable us to play around and release interesting things over that period of time. It's a bit away until, you know, we have something that's 100% ours on the shelf.
Jack is still working on a distribution deal for the U.S. market and hopes to have his whiskeys available in North America by the end of 2014. That's this week's WhiskeyCast In Depth, brought to you by Woodford Reserve. Discover Woodford Reserve Double Oaked, uniquely matured in two separate new white oak barrels, the second deeply toasted and lightly charred for a more complex dimensional flavor. Find out more at woodfordreserve.com. Be double sure. Drink responsibly. Woodford Reserve Double Oaked, Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, 45.2% alcohol by volume, Woodford Reserve Distillery, Versailles, Kentucky. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with the latest release from the Glenrothes. The 2001 vintage is bottled at 43% ABV. The nose is very smooth with notes of oak, vanilla, allspice, black cherries, and a hint of dark chocolate. The taste has mild spices with touches of ginger, allspice, vanilla, and honey, and a nice note of chocolate-covered cherries. The finish is smooth with lingering soft spices. I'm scoring the Glenrothes 2001 vintage a 90. Glenfarclas isn't far from the Glenrothes in Speyside, and I tasted a sample of the Glenfarclas 31-year-old port cask matured single malt this week. It's bottled at 42.8% ABV. The nose has notes of red grapes, honey, vanilla, toasted oak, allspice, and nutmeg. The taste is sweet and fruity with grapefruit, ginger, mild cinnamon, red grapes, and vanilla. The finish is long, aromatic, and slightly spicy with hints of lingering grapefruit. I'm scoring the Glenfarclas 31-year-old port cask a 93. I've added these tasting notes to the searchable list of nearly 1,000 different whiskeys at WhiskeyCast.com. That's also where you'll find WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the latest whiskey news, the calendar of events, and much more. The address is WhiskeyCast.com. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.